because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm John Hankus.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye summary of this week in the state capitol. First topic is the governor's State of the State address. J.R., this was Governor Walker's fifth State of the State now. Can you believe it?
Yeah.
He praised the Packers. Mm-hmm. He trumpeted some new numbers on jobs and unemployment. And he applauded citizens and government leaders for standing up to the terrorists in Paris. So moving into the speech, he touched on some high interest items. Those pronouncements came without a whole lot of detail.
Yes.
For example, he said his state budget recommendations that will be coming out in a couple of weeks will attempt to keep property taxes low. He talked about merging some state agencies. He said legislators should put a plan on his desk for helping Wisconsin's failing schools. Yes. So some high rhetoric. Not a lot of detail.
No.
Some would say it was a safe speech. Is that your interpretation?
Well, in some ways, you look at Walker's State of State in context of two things. One, the calendar he's created. So usually governors do inaugural address early January, State of State late January, yeah. Budget address mid to late February. Walker's compressed it down to 1 month, less than a month, actually. Look at it. He's inaugurated last Monday, speech on Tuesday about State of the State, and now budget address February 3rd. So in some ways, he doesn't have a lot to talk about because it's all going to be in the budget. That's the real meat of what he wants to do. So they have it like almost like a volleyball. Like there was the serve with the State of the State, the inaugural address. It was a set with the State of the State address on Tuesday. Now the spike comes with the budget when the pain really comes. I mean, we have a $2.2 billion deficit. That's kind of an inflated number because it represents agency requests and their wish list. But there is some real pain he has to get out of this budget to make it balance and accomplish the property tax cut he wants to do, or at least some kind of small reduction.
Sure.
Keep things on the path he's created to have, as he says, a lower property tax bill in 2018 than when he walked in the door than it was in 2014. So it's kind of his own doing. But the other thing is, this speech wasn't really written for Wisconsin. I mean, it was written for for the Wisconsin audience. But there was a second audience he's really catering to, which is the national media. This is his fifth one, but I can promise you the previous four weren't covered by the Washington Post, the New York Times, Politico, these national outfits that are looking at, okay, what's this guy have to say, because he's a real contender for the presidential nomination on the GOP side. So that's where you saw the mention of France, the terrorist attacks. You saw him talk about Washington, D.C. I bet you, by the way, he'll talk about Washington, D.C. again in his budget address. He talked about it in the inaugural. It's a lot of a contrast. We get things done in Wisconsin. You know, we're doing things well here. That contrast is what Walker is trying to kind of hitch his presidential wagon to, if you will. Mm-hmm. That, and he talked about last night in California, the RNC, of we need fresh ideas. The states where the fresh ideas are, yeah. We get things done.
Right.
There's dysfunction in Washington, D.C. He's been saying for 2 years our nominee in 16 should come from not Washington, D.C. Well, look where Governor Walker's from, not Washington, D.C. I mean, it's kind of a little self-promotion there that's going on as well.
Well, let me ask you this. Let's take a look at a clip.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, he's speaking to the people of Wisconsin. But in this clip, is he also speaking to that broader national audience? Mm-hmm. Let's take a look.
Our plan will help people get the education and skills that they need to succeed. We want the opportunity to be as equal as possible, with the outcome left up to each and every one of us. In other words, our plan is to help more people live their piece of the American dream right here in Wisconsin.
So again, some high rhetoric,
mm-hmm.
Helping us to feel proud about our accomplishments as Wisconsinites. And that plays well nationally, even though it's a parochial message?
Well, what's Walker said before? For me to be a viable option for president, Wisconsin has to do well. If Wisconsin tanks, I'm going to tank. I mean, so in some way, his success is hitched to Wisconsin's success. That's part of the message that he's trying to deliver there, I think.
Okay, so let's peel it back one layer and look at the speech just as a Wisconsin resident, and forget about the national audience for a moment. There are things that he did not talk about in the speech. Does that hurt him? For example, he did not mention the UW system. He did not reach out to the Native American tribal community, which we know is going to be dealing with the fallout of the Kenosha casino decision that the governor is going to have to be making. He didn't talk about our state's largest city, Milwaukee, or some of the police minority tensions. Did he do himself a disservice by not touching on any of those? Or maybe I missed a couple.
Well, all three of the things you mentioned, there's going to be some negatives to those three things. UW has an issue still with the Capitol about, you know, whether you call it reserves or the slush fund, whatever you want to call it, the money it has in the bank that lawmakers say, wait a second, you've been asking us for tuition hikes for years and you got this money stashed away. Something doesn't add up. There's still some mistrust. Give President Cross some credit. He's been doing some foundation work, if you will, to improve that, but there's still a little bit of a, I'm not so much sure about that. And then Walker's already said tuition freeze, the upcoming budget. Well, if there's no money to give around, how are they going to help UW with a tuition freeze? That's going to be an interesting one to watch. Milwaukee, some uncomfortable things. I mean, they're all things that have a downside. And there is pain to come. This budget is going to be difficult. It's not going to be pretty. And as somebody told me this week, if you get a flat budget when Walker's done with you, you should be thrilled at the end of this process. So,
and I would assume that the governor's hope is that it goes as smoothly as possible. Get it done by mid-June. Mm-hmm. Is that possible?
Possible, yes. Likely, good question. I mean, lawmakers, look at his announcements in the State of the State address. You know, I want to merge these agencies. Lawmakers went, okay, but where are the details? That bill still isn't out. There are some people this week who are like, well, look, if you're going to roll out something big in your State of the State address, the next day there should be a bill that you kick out, or you should have co-sponsors named or whatever that kind of carry that momentum. We're still waiting for a name of this new agency that's going to combine DFI and DSPIS along with WIDA and WIDIC. What are they going to be? So things like that, that you're kind of like, that didn't work out so well. So, you know, just one thing to watch.
So as we talk about a tough budget and controversy, one of the areas that seems to have risen up the flagpole of controversy this last week is this whole issue of school accountability. Mm-hmm. You've got Republicans in both houses who seem at odds about the best approach to this. You had Senators Fitzgerald, Farrow, and Luther Olson saying that separate oversight boards were needed, one for public schools and another for charter choice. Then you had the Assembly Republicans who seemed to have done a reverse on their initial decision to implement an academic review board and headed back to the drawing board to kind of take it on in a different approach. Let's take a look at a clip. This is Representative Jeremy Thiesfield, who chaired that Assembly Education Committee.
The second point would be there has been a lot of concern about the Academic Review Board, or the ARB as it's called in the bill. And I can tell you that in the next version of the bill, the Academic Review Board will be eliminated. It's just another level of bureaucracy that is not necessary. To be frank, there was no fair way that I could come up with to figure out how to get people onto that board.
Interestingly, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss suggested that perhaps one way to iron out these differences between the two houses would be to create a conference committee. And we saw the reaction of Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald. Let's take a look at his reaction.
A conference committee with the Republican Assembly? No, that's not going to happen. With Republicans having control of both chambers, I think that would be kind of foolish. No, we'll iron out the differences and we'll get there and we'll work with the governor's office.
So here's the question. Why the apparent difference of opinion and approach by Republicans who are in agreement that something needs to be accomplished here?
Well, don't forget the governor kind of interjected himself in this bill as well this week, saying essentially sanctions aren't needed to get my signature. Trust the parents. I trust parents. Give them the information and they will be the sanction, essentially. This problem is, you know, the same way it's been for the last 10 months. They broke in March last year without being able to find a way to get an agreed upon accountability bill with sanctions, with whatever. Here we are 10 months later. They rush out these two bills, and they can't get on the same boat again. And so you've got Voss saying, after the governor says, I don't need sanctions for my signature, Voss says, no, I want sanctions in this bill. They will stay in this bill. It's kind of underscores there's tensions between the two caucuses. Now, that's not unusual. I mean, let's be honest. Majority leaders in the Senate and speakers in the assembly often don't get along.
Right.
Especially even when they're from the same party, even when they're brothers sometimes, they don't get along when it comes to matters of the Capitol. That's not unusual. But there's been kind of a heightened sense of tension, if you will, mm-hmm. between Voss and Fitzgerald last couple of years, and that's just gotten worse. And this bill, I guess I should say, this bill is kind of bringing it back out. We thought maybe, okay, they had a break over Christmas, the holidays, maybe things would kind of settle down and get back. No, it's still there. I mean, look at Fitzgerald's comment, foolish. I mean, foolish. That's a week after saying what a mob mentality kind of rules in the assembly. There's definitely some disagreement, if you will. Now, the question is, where do they get on board? Now, Farrow, one of the authors of the Senate bill, said this week he's open to dropping the boards like Thiesfeld suggested. Right. Maybe there's a path forward on that. But the sanctions thing is still a big issue. You know, what are you going to do with those? The senators have talked about there should be some way to cut off choice and charter schools if right. they continually fail. They shouldn't keep getting taxpayer money. So is that an area of agreement? They don't want to do the charter school for a public school. What do you do, for example? I think Thiesfeld talked about this in the hearing. If there's only one public school in your whole city, what do? You make that a charter school? He said, well, you can't really do that. So then holes emerge, if you will, about that plan because of details like that. So there are a lot of areas to work out yet in that bill.
Not to mention the passion is out there in the public. I mean, we saw hour after hour after hour of testimony mm-hmm. at a public hearing where that emotion seems to have just been tapped into, and it seems like a lot more of it is out there.
And there's also this other undercurrent with the choice program. There are advocates that they don't want DPI involved in their lives. You know, they want to operate as, which they are, private schools, independent schools outside of state control, right? That's mm-hmm. why they're there. But by accepting these kids with these vouchers, they're allowing the state in a little bit. They want to keep that door closed as tightly as possible. The more that state in, the more problems it causes you if you're a private school. It's just the way they view it.
Sure.
So when they look at the Thiesfeld board of one board overseeing everybody, they go, whoa, 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 whoa. You're giving DPI, well, not only the chairmanship of that committee, but six more appointments. That gives you 7 of 13. That means DPI, who we view as being hostile to choice, in charge of this thing. We don't like that. Yeah. So they've got to appease those guys because they are a big force in Republican politics these days. They want to make them happy. How do they make that's the issue they have to work out when this bill is done.
Wow. That's a big one.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about an area where Republicans seem to be in agreement, which is I've heard words as strong as completely demolishing and rebuilding the Government Accountability mm-hmm. Board, to tweaking it, to restructuring it, to clearing out the current staff and leadership and starting over again. I mean, there's been some pretty energetic rhetoric about what needs to be accomplished. Your initial read on what's been happening this last week with the charges that have been levied by Republicans and then the audit report that's come out and Kennedy's response to that audit report. What's your take on where we are with that right now?
One, Republicans have been looking for a way to overhaul whatever you want to use, word you want to use, this board for a while now. Fitzgerald and Voss were very vocal in their criticism of the GAB last year. The audit in December only fueled that fire. Mm-hmm. And they thought, okay, maybe they go home for Christmas, things temper a little bit. No, this hearing this week to kind of re-air the grievances, if you will, just kind of fuel it back up. They keep talking about a rogue agency. I do get the impression that Kennedy's declaration of the GAB being a success story did not go over well with Republicans in general. He talked about how they've been hampered by a lack of resources and staff, especially with the unprecedented run of elections we've had in Wisconsin the last 4 years. John Nygren, co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, was like, wait a second, why weren't you at my door asking for money? I've heard this before. What's going on? So there's a lot of distrust with those folks between the legislature, Republicans, and the GAB. Now, Democrats, they're over here going, wait a second, you guys are trying to, destroy the regulators. These guys are, what are you doing over here? This board is independent. You know, we've got our problems with them, but it's not as severe as what you guys want to do. They are kind of suspicious, if you will, of the Republican effort, what their motivations are. The question becomes, what's it look like in the end? They've talked about a hybrid board, keeping retired judges, but adding other people, adding partisans, if you will, making an odd number of appointments, because right now it's six people. You have three ties possible. Obviously, going to seven, you eliminate that possibility outside of abstentions. So, but again, the structure is going to be difficult because you're regulating the regulators. They want accountability. Well, who do you have them be accountable to if they oversee you? That's a little tricky, things like that be worked out yet. Dean Knudsen's been talking about his bill, hopes to have a draft out soon, and we'll kind of see those details once that's out. But they seem to be kind of that bill will probably pop first in the assembly, looks like.
Let's take a look at a little bit of the action from this week. It seemed that the three main points Republicans were making were getting some traction this week. One, they talked about how inappropriate it was in an overreach for GAB to sign on to the John Doe probe of then Milwaukee County exec Scott Walker. Secondly, this whole idea about pushing new election ballots without the approval of the full board and without notifying those in elected office that was their decision. And then thirdly, this more generic but fairly strident accusation that staff was dominating that board of retired judges. Let's take a look at Representative Knudsen from his interview with WisPolitics and Wisconsin Eye.
You can see it with the whole John Doe where, you know, they've been funding the John Doe. At the GAB, staff's allowed to spend $100,000 without talking with anyone. Staff created this new ballot, released it to the public to be used in an election before ever even going to the board. And you combine that with the level of secrecy they've got, with the lack of transparency or reporting, with the lack of talking and communicating with the judges, the board itself that's supposed to be overseeing them, and you've got a recipe for trouble.
And then equally energetic, on the other side of the controversy, is Kevin Kennedy of GAB, who testified before the Joint Audit Committee. Let's listen to what he had to say on this.
So with all due respect, it seems a bit disingenuous for some to be repeatedly criticizing the GAB for following the state's confidentiality laws for investigations. This is especially true when the critics are the people who have the power to change the laws under which we operate. It's unfair to the dedicated public servants who are doing their jobs as directed by the legislature and who are being accountable to the statutes.
The committee was late. Okay, so there you have it. It's pretty energetic on both sides. How do you think this is going to play out?
It's a question of structure. What bill does Knudsen come up with? Are people okay with it? I should say Republicans okay with it because they dominate the legislature right now. It's really their ball to play with, if you will. So are they happy with that? Can they get it through? I mean, even Chair Nickel in the hearing this week talked about how he argued it's an independent agency and it's done well, but yeah, we've got a communication problem. We haven't communicated enough with you guys. So I don't think it's too late, if you will, to build that bridge. They're going to have some kind of overhaul done. It's just a matter of the structure.
Does a partisan board work in the law and view?
Well, Republicans are so frustrated with the current structure. Some have talked about going back to the old elections board, which, again, I mean, if you go back to the 2006 election with Governor Doyle and Mark Green, there's this huge controversy because a Democratic Party lawyer was emailing the Democratic appointees and urging them how to vote a certain way on a topic. So is that appropriate? It was allowed. I mean, there's nothing illegal about it, but there's a little bit of a taint to it, if you will. And Republicans will tell you, yeah, we lobbied our members too. So these decisions were made through a partisan prism at the time. The Republicans, though, will tell you that, look, this isn't any better because it's the staff that are driving things. These retired judges are more go-along types in their minds. Now, fair criticism or not, that's their perception of the GAB, and that's why they're so hopped up to get this thing changed.
I think we could probably tackle three or four other events in the Capitol this week, but for purposes of time, let's move into the stock report, okay. The WisPolitics stock report, rising, falling, mixed.
Sure, well, rising Paul Ryan, he decided against running for president, but everybody you talk to says that's the right decision to make for him. I mean, if you think about it, he's 44 years old. He turns 45, I think, end of January. He's chair of Ways and Means. He has a huge opportunity right now to have an imprint on everything from Social Security to corporate tax structure to overall the entire tax code if he wants to, if they can get it done. He has time to run for president. Now, Governor Walker's a different story. Governor Walker, a strike with the iron is hot. He's won 3 elections in 4 years in a purple to blue leading state.
Yeah.
He needs to do it now. This is his time. He can't wait 10 years. Paul Ryan can. He can do 6 years of chair of Ways and Means. By the way, if he had decided to run, if he had given up Ways and Means, very difficult to do. He's got these 6 years, in theory, if they hold the House Republicans, build a record. He can even leave Congress, go out, work at a think tank, make big money, have a private sector career for a while, and still run, and still be in his 50s and run for president. There are huge opportunities for him. Now, there are some people who will tell you he should have waited longer to make his announcement, you know, keep the buzz going, if you will. Wait to see if how the primary plays out. If there's a damaged nominee or damaged frontrunner, I should say, like 8 months from now, maybe Ryan would jump in last minute. But he's still, for the most part, going to be a huge, huge player in D.C. for the next, you know, 6 years as chair of Ways and Means.
His decision to not run now really does help Scott Walker.
It clears one obstacle, yes.
Is it fair to suggest that Walker's movement toward a run by hiring a national consultant a week or two ago, do you think that came on the heels of, or was there prior knowledge in the Walker camp that Ryan wasn't going to do this?
Oh, the perception that Ryan wouldn't run has been around for weeks. I mean, even after the November election, the perception was it's unlikely to happen. Walker has been making moves for a long time. I mean, there has not been any doubt. Since the day he won the recall election and Mitt Romney lost the presidency in 2012, we've all known Walker's going to dip his toe in the presidential pool, if you will. And it's only been intensified as he won re-election. That was the only thing. Was he going to win in 2014? He pulled that off. He's all but assured to run. Bringing Rick Wiley, that was in the works for a while. Wiley had been working for him in December, from what my sources tell me. So this is not like it happened all of a sudden in January when Ryan was close. It's been happening for a while for the Walker camp.
So Walker's doing what he needs to do. Mm-hmm. And you describe Paul Ryan pulling out as an obstacle removed. What are the other obstacles that Walker would say need to be removed for him to effectively move forward at this point?
Well, you know, there's this dynamic in the Republican pool right now of, okay, who's a front runner? Well, Jeb Bush is kind of a front runner right now, but you see the stories this week about how Walker may be best positioned to be the stealth candidate, if you will, to kind of emerge and be the best challenger for him. Christie Starr is fading. All these pieces are moving. Remember this, all right? In 2007, we were going to have Hillary Clinton and Rudy Giuliani as our nominees from both parties run for president. That did not work out that way.
Right.
So Walker's kind of positioned right now to be the emerging candidate, if you will. There's always a front runner a year out from the first caucus where people talk about, oh, there's an inevitability factor. That person almost always seems to fade. Can Walker position himself to be the person who takes advantage of that opportunity and rise, if you will? You know, the things about, does he have a college degree? Is that going to be a big deal? His line, what now, is I've got a master's in life or something like that. You know, that's his kind of cutesy line about his education. The John Doe probes, look, he's never been charged, but the ads write themselves.
Yeah.
He is from a small state. It's not a huge one. You know, it's bluish, but it's small. It's not like he's from a big, giant center. He does have a national fundraising operation, but it's not just about contacts and people making $50 donations now. It's about Sheldon Adelson writing checks for $1 million at a time.
Sure.
Can he find that kind of donor to back a super PAC and help? All these things like that. He has to build a national operation.
So right now my stock is replacement for Steve Walters is falling because I've pulled you off course here. We were talking about Paul Ryan's stock rising. So who's in the mixed category?
Well, Walker is, I mean, the national stuff is good. You know, people are talking about him. He's getting attention. But if you look at the Wisconsin stuff, the speech was kind of you know, people shrugged their shoulders, like, well, where is the substance? And now Walker's backers are almost amused at the, you know, the knock that, well, it was too short. Like, what politicians accuse of being too brief, you know? But there wasn't a substance there. There wasn't a big, giant call to action that really had momentum behind it. Again, like with the merger, why not have a bill out the next day saying, here are your details, let's go. You know, we're ready to go out to action. He didn't go tour the state. Almost every governor I've covered, the day after the state, where are they? Around the state on a fly around, you know, touting their proposals or their big initiative. You know, Walker talked in generalities. And again, it's because of the budget address coming so short in part. And, you know, he's kind of like a little nudge the national audience, if you will. So in Wisconsin, he's got some issues. The casino in Kenosha, what's he going to do?
Right.
The BIA had that announcement on Friday. They're not going to go along with this amended compact for the Potawatomi to compensate them for potential losses from the Menominee's project and casino if it's approved. What's he do there? You know, the merger stuff. I mean, it's just kind of a blah. And that's unusual. Usually, states of the states, they're like the easiest home run to hit as governor because you are front and center for everybody in Wisconsin.
So he gets mixed review on mm-hmm. the state-to-state performance. But let me ask you a follow-up. He has been a decision maker known for calculated steps, mm-hmm. thoughtful approaches to things. As you consider a run for president, given his current resume, where does that calculated step come in with regard to building his international or his foreign resume? When does that have to happen?
Well, it's a challenge for all governors. I mean, go back to Bill Clinton in 92. That was a knock on him. He's never been, you know, they don't deal with folks outside of the borders around their state, right? I mean, George Bush, same thing. It's a knock for every governor. That's why I saw the France, you know, mention in the State of the State this week. It's kind of a nudge toward that. He knows he has to work that up. The knocks on him nationally are about that. Personality, Governor Walker comes across as a pretty, you know, okay guy, but he's not real fire, you know, not a fire breather. Doesn't really inspire passion, if you will. The people who love him in Wisconsin absolutely love the guy. But as far as working on a national audience, it's a little different task. And so there's some, well, his speaking style is kind of mild. He's not a real big, fiery guy. He's not like Bill Clinton, I feel your pain, or, you know, that connection, if you will. So things like that he has to work on and kind of build. But he also has a strength in that if you think about the Republican Party, you have a financial wing and you have a kind of religious right wing, if you will. Walker is one of the few candidates who can speak with authority in both wings and have him go, okay, this guy has some legitimacy in my mind on my issues. So
on an issue like the Kenosha Casino, which taps into sentiments on both sides, mm-hmm. what's the win-win for him on that?
Or is there
not a win-win?
Good question, because if you're a Christian evangelical voter in Iowa, which those votes make up a huge portion of the caucus electorate, right? Do you want to see an expansion of gaming? Do you want a guy who's expanded gaming next door? If you're Sheldon Adelson, bring him back up. Do you want to see an expansion of gaming anywhere to have another reason for people not to go to Vegas to go gamble in your casino? I mean, you know, there are issues like that that kind of play. You can maybe make the argument if you're a Walker that, look, this is not a national issue. This is a jobs issue. You can say, look, we created, by proving this, 4,000, whatever it's going to be, 4,000 jobs. That maybe you can sell it that way, but there are some issues there for him to work through.
It takes a special person to want to run for president, I think.
Or as he says, crazy, right?
Yeah. finally, whose star stock is falling?
The school accountability bill. I mean, this thing is a quagmire. Now, they will maybe get there in the end, but this was not the week they wanted to launch this thing. Look at the infighting going on. They can't get on the same page. They drop, days after unveiling the assembly bill, they drop a key component of it. I mean, like, there's things like that. Even Republicans who looked at the hearing on Wednesday went, okay, wait a second. The Dems have a decent argument that you're having this long public hearing on a bill that doesn't exist. What are we doing here? Never mind that they had to spend 6 hours, whatever it was, listening to people complain about a bill that isn't going to be on the agenda. So it wasn't a great start. And again, those tensions between Voss and Fitzgerald just brought to the forefront on this. I mean, you know, Fitz has got a good elbow in there on Voss. That's foolish. The idea from the speaker about going to a conference committee. So they may get there in the end. Farrell's talking about changes. They want to find a compromise, but what's it going to look like? And, oh, by the way, first bill out of the gate, not going to happen now. You know, they got the calendar out for the assembly next week. They're taking up the constitutional amendment on the Chief Justice. This is not on the calendar. They really wanted it to be like priority one to kind of pop this out and go, look, we have found a solution. We're going to make your schools accountable to you, and that's not going to happen in the near future.
Am I reading too much into Senator Fitzgerald's press conference comments where he said, well, we'll figure this out. We'll sit down with the governor's office. Is that to suggest that the Senate Republicans may well want to win and curry the governor's favor on this thing and bypass what might necessarily be extended conversations with the assembly?
Well, they've got to work out something, but the governor's comments kind of interject this new angle of, I don't need sanctions, guys. You give me a bill without sanctions, and we're okay. So, and you see some of these advocates for the voucher program saying, I trust the parents. That's like the big line now this mm-hmm. week. Their minds, you can get this done without that. But what do you do if you're Robin Voss? You say, look, these voucher schools, these charter schools, if they fail consistently, why should they keep getting state money? Now, they don't get directly, you know, that goes to the kid, the voucher, but why should they still be eligible if they consistently fail? I think Luther Olson's line this week was, some of these schools are testing 2% proficiency. I could take kids swimming every day and get them to test 2%. You know, what's going on? So there's that issue. And then take the Dems, by the way, who are going, we're going to use this issue in the campaign in 2016 and say, look, they're expanding these choice programs into your backyard. Not just Milwaukee and Racine anymore. It's your backyard taking money from your kids to put into this program that is not accountable, that has people who are unqualified teaching, it's in some districts it'd be a good issue for them come 2016.
Sure. Well, there you have it. Mission accomplished. This week in the Capitol, this week, Rewind. JR, thank you so much. I'm John Henkes.
And I'm JR Ross.
Thank you.